to buy one of your secondhand plates.
Get on.
Well, not yours, to be honest.
Yeah.
So they've suddenly got warehouses full of bikes and they're like 50% off, 50% off.
So that's a moral decision made to be like, see ya, yeah. I'm coming through.
It's always got to be the newest, the fastest, the shiniest, yeah. the lightest, where you don't really need all that.
Hello, welcome to the Global Mountain Bike Show. This week, has there ever been a better time to buy a second-hand mountain bike? Is cheating allowed in mountain biking? And if you had a certain amount of money, what is the best value upgrade you could get? Yeah, this week I'm joined by Mr. James Pickering, Fergus Ryan. How are we doing, boys?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Not too bad. I'm still here. Just
good
about.
To have you guys on. Now, recently in the office, I was chatting to young cameraman Daniel, who's bought an absolute steal of a second-hand bike, a Specialized Stump Jumper Evo. Mm-hmm. And it's the top spec one, isn't it?
Unbelievable. Yeah. So it was £2,300.
Yeah, virtually new.
Full factory.
Yeah. And that got us thinking, has there ever been a better time to buy a second-hand bike and get into mountain biking, essentially?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think like the level of mountain bike has got so high in the last few years that actually all the tech has trickled down to those lower price points that it's like, I think a couple of decades ago, even 10 years ago, if you bought like cheap forks, cheap group sets, they were rubbish, right?
Yeah.
But now you can actually just afford to get sort of lower spec stuff and it's great. And there is such a great secondhand offering.
Exactly. There's some great examples of this actually. We trawled around online. So a Yeti SB66 Carbon. Now, a bike that's, it's got to be a bit over 10 years old now, actually, but it was a dreamy bike. I actually had a metal one of these back in the day. Full bike we found for £500.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Right? It was actually a dream bike when I was growing up. That was insane.
Yeah, when you think about the shonkers we were riding on the Presenter Challenge as well.
Yeah.
For another £200, you could get a really usable mountain bike.
Exactly. A Yeti SB130 2022 model, £1,900. Yeah. I got another one. A 23 Specialized Kenevo SL S-Works, £3,500. That's a bike that I think was over £10,000 brand new. Yeah. That's only 6 years old. And finally, a Specialized Demo 8 for £950 complete.
That's amazing.
What a rig.
Unbelievable,
if you're
right?
Going like on a bike holiday for the summer and you just wanted a bike, why rent a bike when you just buy that?
100%. I obviously to hire a bike would cost more than that.
Yeah.
A downhill bike.
In Whistler.
Yeah,
or
and this one you could like sell it for yourself. You can do it all and then you've got the bike afterwards.
And I dare say you could probably sell it on for the same price again, yeah. Right? So Ferg, why is it that the secondhand market is just so good at the moment?
So it essentially all started back in COVID. We had a massive boom when everyone wasn't working. They were like, well, I know what I can do. I can go and ride my bike, which is amazing. So cool to see loads of people getting out on mountain bikes. But what happened was the demand went through the roof. Bikes all sold out. So the industry reacted by going, well, we've got this huge influx of bikes.
The demand was there, right?
Potentially a little bit greedy. They were like, yeah, sweet, we can make loads of money. So they ordered in millions of bikes, right? Yeah. And they arrived just as the COVID boom ended. And
everyone's
then
back to work.
Yeah, everyone went back to work. And what you've ended up with is tons of bikes brand new that have had to reduce in price because of overstocking. But what that's led to is then people who were maybe thinking about buying a new bike have gone, oh, I can now afford that bike because the prices have come down of a new bike. And then they've sold their bike earlier. So it's meant that the secondhand industry or secondhand bike market is unbelievable. It's full of factory bikes and
there's a bigger turnover of bikes essentially, isn't there?
Because amazing.
No, go on, James.
I think the thing with the bike industry as well is there's a new model each year, right? Even if it's just a new color. So by the time all these like overstocked COVID bikes come in, brands like, oh, we've got our 2021 model out now.
Yeah.
So they've suddenly got warehouses full of bikes and they're like, God, we've got our new model out in 2 weeks' time. So it's like 50% off, 50% off. So
yeah,
then all these brand new bikes are mega cheap. And then everyone with a secondhand bike's like, well, if a brand new bike's 50% off, my secondhand bike's going to have to be like...
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Like essentially the manufacturers have sort of shot themselves in the foot to a degree there, right? But I mean, for the benefit of
the consumer.
The punter, right? Yeah. To be able to buy these incredible deals. I also think that it's come down to the sort of safety of buying secondhand has improved as well. Sure. So like back in the day, it'd be a little cash in hand in Tesco car park. There you go.
You'd be checking it over with an inch of its life. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas now, you know, I mean, you've still got sites like
eBay,
Pink Bike Secondhand, Facebook Marketplace, Gumtree.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that lots of regional ones out there as well. But now you've got sort of buyer protection as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you pay by credit card on certain things, you can obviously get it protected. And I think that certainly helps.
Yeah. So like PayPal do their buyer protection and it is totally sized with the buyer. So if you buy something from a secondhand site and it's not as described, they'll give you your money back straight away before you've even returned the product. So I think
it's not bad, is it?
You've got that protection now that before you were taking a punt, really. You'd go in there with your cash in hand.
It's risky, wasn't it?
You might ride it for 6 weeks and it's cracked. Whereas I think these days, unless it's like a solder scene, you can sort of, you know, you've got that benefit that like, you're like, well, if all goes wrong, you can sort of get your money back.
And completely.
On that note, you also have,
I was going to say, go on,
second user warranties.
Yeah, that's
so
brilliant.
So like the people like Specialized, I believe, I think Santa Cruz have done the same. Now, if you sell a bike onto that second buyer, you're as covered as the original purchaser. So
which
you
never existed before.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's like another cameraman of ours bought a secondhand Santa Cruz. He cracked the frame and they still benefit him with all the crash replacement, all the after sales service. So yeah, you've bought a bike of someone that's a complete stranger and you still get all that customer support that you'd get as if you're buying a new bike.
So, I mean, it all sounds dreamy. It sounds absolutely dreamy, which I genuinely think it is. And I sort of dived into this at a video that went out at the weekend on sort of AliExpress versus secondhand. Mm-hmm. So the big question is, should we still be buying new?
Well, I think there is still, like I was saying earlier, that trickle down. There is now brands bringing out such great value bikes from brand new. And the products are great now. So you've got like Shimano Qs, like you spoke about, RockShox Silo Fork. So normally if you bought like a cheap bike 5-10 years ago, you got an absolute stinker of a fork, didn't you? It was like 34 mil stanchion, flexiers out, no dampening. Like these silos, you've got loads of stuff you can do to them. On the e-bikes, you've got like the Kado S from White. That's $4,000 for a Bosch CX equipped motor.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Amflow do the PR Carbon. That's £4,000 with the Avanox motor.
Yep.
And then Canyon have released that new, is it the Neuron AL7?
Torque AL,
180mm travel enduro bike. It's got RockShox Zeb, 4-port SLX brakes, Dior group set. It's like £2,399 for a
brand new... too good to be true, almost.
One, you can also get finance on them as well. So yeah, you don't have to have that lump sum.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I do think that like manufacturer greed has fueled this for the best part in driving actually their own prices down. That's not to say there's still a huge range of prices. Like there are bikes £13,000, which is a monstrously large amount. And I don't really ever encourage anyone to get stuff on finance, but we do see it opening the doors to certain people who maybe want to get a new fancy bike with sort of 0% APR and stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think it just opens the market to like you can get a load of different brands that potentially would have been out of your price range and you don't have to, you can offset it, right? The finance, that's the beauty of it. You're not having a £4,000 lump sum payment.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of cash.
There's a load of cash. I mean, who has £4,500 or £5,000 just lying around? Whereas...
Not me.
Yeah. Whereas you can spread that cost over, you know, 24 months. I know loads of people. There was like a shop down in Surrey Hills. It was the most insane thing. They had...
Down in Surrey Hills, and people
would buy a bike on finance. And then the guy was like, oh, this, I've got a good business model here. So they'd ride it for 12 months, hand it back. He'd hand them a brand new bike on another 12 months finance.
That's clever.
And then just sell off the second-hand bike. And because it had only been there for 12 months and he knew he was going to get it back, he'd invisi-frame it, he'd protect the bike.
It's like brand new.
And it was then like brand new. And you're like... That's such pretty a smart plan. Like you say, renting a top spec bike instead of actually having to worry about owning it.
And I know
it's pretty cool.
We have it in the UK and I was recently in Germany and someone was saying they have a similar thing over there. But if you buy brand new, you can get a cycle to work scheme as well.
Yes, we do. Yeah, there are
like
various versions.
Salary sacrifice, buying a bike scheme where it comes out of your income basically. So it saves you on tax and you get your bike at a cheaper rate. And again, it's like you can just offset the monthly cost rather than having to have £4,000 or £5,000 cash to lay down. So you can get really good capable bikes, like you said, the Canyon, Amflo, White, and you can sort of pay 100 quid a month for them rather than...
Yeah, I'm going to play devil's advocate though. Trust in that bike. Now, you did mention earlier about, oh, it might break, it might, you know, snap, busted, mm-hmm. whatever, you don't know what's gone. Is that still an issue? I touched on this again in my video. The unknown of what's happened to that bike, especially, what did we say there? It was a demo, a special demo 8. It's not going to have had a soft life, people.
I wouldn't want to buy one of your second-hand bikes.
Get on!
Not yours, to be honest.
Yeah, treated with love and care by the mechanics.
I think, so there is that.
I think the other issue you have, like you say, like racers' bikes, especially talking about ours, racers' bikes will look immaculate, right? They will be to a point they will look immaculate, right? You could have changed all the bearings, but the reality is that bike has been flexed out a lot.
Oh, it's been hammered.
I remember one of my mates bought Eddie Masters' old Pivot. Bergamot
way back in the day.
That bike was absolutely ruined, and no matter how many new bearings you put in it, it just wasn't back to scratch. But it looked immaculate, and how you
agreed?
Know that,
you've actually got me thinking. I saw an old Orbea of mine, a gold one, Rallon. It would have been someone had bought that for, I think it was 1,800 quid or something, very affordable for the spec it was. And I was like, well, I know what's happened to that bike, but at that price, I would take that risk.
Yeah, I think carbon's a lot better now than it used to be, so you can have that guarantee that, like, I feel like when bikes used to get like 5 years old, you did used to feel it, whereas maybe they don't anymore. And also carbon repairing is a massive thing now as well.
Yeah,
I think
there's
like Adam
come on away.
Repaired is the V10 we have,
true,
and it's kind of like you can trust that, but
there's still an element of risk.
You want
there's
something sort of so nice as well about like a brand new bike,
old owner, don't you?
You talking about my bike still?
Yeah.
All right, let us know in the comments down below. Are you sort of a second-hand only person? Have you managed to find an absolute bargain these days? Do let us know.
Yeah, and let us know your deals because we want to find the best bargains, right?
Yeah. Cheating in mountain bike racing. Big one, gents.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's right. Okay, so let's set the scene here because this is a massive topic. Now, recently there was two rather large mass start French races. Apparently there's a road one on at the same time, but that doesn't really matter. But these off-road ones, one of them is which called the Mountain of Hell. Now, you boys have heard of it. For those who may have not, it's a massive mass start, 21 miles, I believe, over 2,500 meter descending, downhill race, essentially.
Yeah, crazy.
Now, it's a lot of very open track. It's a lot of very open to interpretation riding, shall we say. There's a very famous rider, Kilian Bron, his name is, French rider, very, very good, who often does quite well at these events, who unfortunately had a bit of a disastrous start to this year's edition.
They're a mass start, aren't they?
They are. And this one's crazy. This one's like big piece, tight right-hander, chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos ensued. But what sort of followed later on in the race and what he put out on social media is what really caught a lot of people's attention.
Yeah.
In the fact that he's stuck behind a lot of people. He's clearly faster. He's a very good rider. But the clip depicts him, and this is a clip he put up on his own social media, of him straight lining it through all these turns.
Yeah.
And just overtaking people.
Yeah.
Now, is that... what are we thinking? Like...
I mean, I think
the comments
kind of spoke for themselves, right? We saw Remy Gorvan, famous enduro racer, ex-pro, and he straight away said, you know, didn't see these lines out of you, Eddie Masters. Eddie goes, I didn't have my
contact lenses
or safety specs on me. Obviously saying about, you know, you can't see these lines because they're not really there. A lot of people saying Danny Hart was like, how is this allowed?
Yeah.
You know, and I can understand where those guys could get upset from it because, you know, is it in the spirit of racing? You know, we all take part in racing for fun and also for competitive fairness and competitiveness within a track. But
That's a wild line though, right?
It is a wild line, but in fairness to Kilian Bron, as he replied in the comments as well, the rules of the race state that if you ride between the two gates, they have these gates.
Stop you there, I'm glad you asked. I have the rule right here to read out to you. So
read out.
We'll put it up on screen at the same time. Now this is under 6.2 of the rule book. On the course, riders must stay within the boundaries of the circuit, which are marked by nets, barrier tape, arrows, or directional gates. If they leave the course, they must return to the course at the point where they left. Track marshals positioned along the course will ensure that riders stay on track. They will be responsible for reporting any infringements to the race director and the FFC referees. All competitors must cross the finish line with their bikes to be classified. I mean, this is where the rule book is kind of massively open to interpretation, because on these mass start events, and we'll get to another one in a moment, which I've just done, is that there are, you cannot tape the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's impossible. They're huge.
It's a little bit reminds me of Hardline, where they don't want to tape Hardline, right? This Hardline Wales, because it's ugly tape all down the course. So the general rule of thumb with Hardline was stick to the main line. We're not going to tape the whole thing. Tape looks rubbish. And then they had that whole thing. Bernard Kerr kicked up a fuss because some people were taking sort of...
That was actually in Tassie. Yeah, that was it. So in Tassie, two of the riders hid some lines.
Yeah, yeah. And they straight lined through some berms as well, didn't they, almost? Well, they doubled up.
But essentially there was a course marker, and it had been, I would say,
improperly
positioned.
Right.
And it allowed for a straight line. Now, where Bernard got upset, without going too far off topic, where Bernard got upset was the fact that people withheld that line knowing about it, and yet he was expected to help other riders through some of the jumps. Yeah. Now, I can understand where he gets upset about that, but it back to the line of racing, I think this is where enduro kind of, you and I will have experience with this. They have the same ruling. It's the same. We don't have tape everywhere. You can't, because it's, I mean, imagine how much tape you need. It'd be insane. But what they say is, wherever possible, where there isn't course markings, you are to follow the line of the trail and the trail to the best of your ability. Now, as you can very clearly see in the clip with Killian, there are about 50 riders all riding the trail.
A clear trail.
It is very obviously there.
And people aren't going to let you pass, really, are they?
Well, so this is just the problem. That's the perils of racing. If you crash, you're stuck behind people. That's just how it goes.
Same with XC.
So that's a moral decision made to be like, see ya, I'm coming through.
Races are races, though, right? And wherever there's a chance to win a bike race, win prize money, get extra sponsorship, get extra clout.
Like, yeah, agreed,
People, like, it's the same in any sport, motorsport, whatever. People will take the rules with a pinch of salt, because it's like, if I'm not technically breaking them and I can get an
advantage... Which he isn't. That's the thing, he isn't.
Marginal, marginal gains, right?
But and it's not marginal.
Yeah.
It's sportsman, not in this case.
It's sportsmanship at that point, though, isn't it? And it's like, you need to have, like... I think in races where there's less people, like Hardline, you can have an agreement amongst 20 riders, and it's a lot easier for everyone to go, let's have a meeting, we all agree, let's do this. When there's thousands of people, you can't all be like, yeah, I agree to not cut
big handshakes on the start line.
Yeah, like, it's going to take too long, so I think it's harder to sort of install those rules.
Yeah, well, so this seems to be more of a problem in mass start racing, because it is harder to police, it is harder to enforce, it's harder to tape, etc. I literally witnessed it in front of my very own eyeballs racing Mega the other day.
Yeah.
Qualifying, I'm stuck behind someone, I can't get past, some guy's behind me a little bit, he literally hoons it, but this time clearly the other side of the tape passed us and cuts back in. And I literally call him out.
Politely, I'm sure.
It wasn't that bad, because I knew I was on camera. I mean, we'll play it for you right now.
Oh, you cheat. Yo, no cheating.
And he literally just comes the other side of the tape, joins back in, and there was another clip of another guy doing it.
Yeah.
I think when stuff like that happens, it pisses you off. And you think, well, if he's cheating, when I cheat?
So it sets a bad example.
Yeah. I think the importance comes with when you are, especially when you're a rider of, you know, that caliber, it's also down to you to set that precedent. To show how racing should be done. I mean, speaking of the Mega, we have a classic example, and in the comments, so many people were tagging him. Joe Connell, one of my ex-teammates, he got caught on camera by Deeks.
Yeah, Ben Deacon, for those who may not know.
The Deaconator. He caught him cutting, again, similar thing, got caught behind a boat, got annoyed, was like, I can't be doing this, I need to do well. pulled off, did a dead straight line through a bunch of turns. Deeks caught him on camera, spoke to him, gave him the opportunity to
own up
and said, if you don't, I'm going to put it online. He didn't. They put it online and, you know, the internet just blew up with
oh my god.
And I remember it was insane.
Like, proper hatred. It was a bit harsh. Yeah. Like, yeah, and the internet's a harsh place.
Well, exactly. And like Connell actually ended up, I believe he actually ended up potentially losing one of his contracts because of it, which is, I mean, it's harsh, but
it's up to the company.
Like you say, it is down to one of those things where you do think people need to adhere to rules. But I think that race organizers need to be clearer always. Yeah. And wherever there's anything where they're like, oh, is this marginal? Make it clearer, or make a statement like the EWS do, where it's like within the spirit of racing.
Well, that's it. And all James, you'll be able to tell us, all UCI events now, they are very clear. And we've had a few occasions this year on their rules when it comes to leaving the course and where you join back in, right?
Yeah, it's non-negotiable. That's the thing, I think, where the UCI get it right, is if you leave the course, you have to regain at that certain point. And the UCI enforce it super strict. Yeah. Whereas I think the problem with these rules is they're a little bit vague. They're not like non-negotiables. It's not like, it's down to the race organizer or whoever the governing body is to be like, we're going to enforce this. And it's not just a slap on the wrist if you get it wrong. It's like, you're out.
But there are also examples where riders have done really good things. So Jack Moore in 2023, in Loudonville, literally final stage of the day, guy's doing unbelievably well, drops in, rides down, and then basically the line that was the most obvious line went through a bush.
Because the tape had been blown out, right?
Because the tape had been blown out, a bunch of riders had gone through it, and that had become essentially what was seen to be the line. He realised he'd basically just sent it through a bush. So he stopped, pushed back up, went round the proper way. It definitely cost him a bunch of positions, potentially the race, but it's the right thing to do, right? And he was like, and he put it on his YouTube and everyone praised him for it. So there are examples where people have done the right thing as well.
That's it. So the big question then, what can be done to sort of improve this scenario? You know, is it down to organisers to enforce these things better? Is it down to a rider to have, should we say, better morals and ethics or sportsmanship when it comes to racing? I mean, there are so many things that can become a variable in these sort of scenarios. Maybe it's something we just turn a blind eye to in mass start.
Can I raise one last point?
Go on.
I think it's like, it just comes down to like race's nature, because we see it on Strava as well, right? And that's not even like for prize money, not even for sponsorship. People for a Strava KOM will cut corners.
Oh, James, we're going down a rabbit hole here.
So I just think
we're going down a rabbit hole.
Wherever there's competition, there's like bending of rules. But
well, let us know in the comments below. Gents, last week I put out a sort of an EMBN upgrade video, and it got me thinking, what are some of the best value upgrades that we can make to either our bikes or, should we say, ourselves and our skills that we could possibly do. Now, this is off the back of actually another video you've got coming up, which is called
The Anti-Upgrade Guide.
The Anti-Upgrade Guide. Flipping
there's the fun in that.
The Anti-Upgrade Guide.
When enough is actually perfect.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the sort of, I quite like that. Yeah. That's an interesting take on it.
I mean, I think because we get so obsessed with having like the newest, the shine, like we're all in a very fortunate position that we get loaned these rather lovely bikes.
We're also a trio of magpies that like shiny things, right?
Exactly that. It's always got to be the newest, the fastest, the shiniest, the lightest, where you don't really need all that, do you?
Yeah, I don't know about you. When I got my first Saturday job at a bike shop, and they used to pay me £4 an hour, but every single bit of money I got from that bike shop, I spent back in that bike shop.
Yeah, I was exactly. It's so a like, circular economy.
Oh, I want this. Oh, it's anodized.
It's the same thing, but a different colour, mate. That's exactly it.
These grips have got different bar ends.
Interesting. So the anti-upgrade guide. Yep. Now, I'm intrigued as to what will be in that. Now, do you know what? For me, I was thinking about this and, you know, I did my e-bike version. I was like, there's some basics in there I thought were pretty good, affordable upgrades. So we had some tyres and and some brakes, actually, I think make a huge difference on e-bikes. But another one I didn't put in, and I kind of wish I had, was coaching. Mm-hmm. So a bit of skills coaching, I think, for a lot of us. Even myself, I will include myself in that sometimes. Don't nod your head like that, James. Cheeky monkey. Probably would help now and again, to be fair. Actually focusing on technique, style, line choice,
all sorts.
I think
as well, if you were moving from a regular mountain bike to an e-bike,
yeah,
there is a difference there. Obviously, you're throwing around more weight, so there's a lot, not a lot more sort of processing having to go on, but you're going to have to adapt your riding style. Yeah. And I think, yeah, learning how to ride that bike with help is probably a good thing.
Yeah, from like a qualified coach, a professional sort of out there.
But I often find as well, like people who've been riding bikes as long as we have, you learn to corner 20, 30 years ago in some cases.
Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. So like when you, like new riders get coaches and they learn how to corner by a qualified coach from the beginning, but like actually we might have been cornering wrong for the last 20 years, and
so tell me that now.
Sometimes it's actually like I like having someone glance over my riding and just slightly unpicking what you do, because you just get into habits, don't
completely.
You this is how I jump, this is how I do a go off drops, this is how I break,
and
you've just done it for 20 years, so that works.
It's habit, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually probably to have a coach to just unpick a few things.
Yeah, so if I was to say to you, James, there's a couple hundred quid there, James.
Cheers, I'll go down to the boozer.
There's a couple hundred quid to spend on the... What would be the best value upgrade you could think of? What would you sort of recommend? I'm intrigued.
From like an XC perspective, if I purely wanted to get faster, like something really cheap is like a heart rate monitor.
Okay.
Because you can suddenly learn so much about your body, and then you can also just research how to train with it as well. Mm-hmm. And you sort of learn all your training zones and you can work out how to train. And that can be like 30, 40 pounds.
But you'd need that hooked up something though, right?
Yeah. So I guess so a lot of Amp Plus heart rate monitors, you can connect to like Strava.
Oh, so directly to your phone?
Directly to your phone. I believe the Garmin ones, you can connect to Garmin Connect app.
Yeah, okay.
So that can be quite cheap. You can get a head unit as well. Again, there are quite good value head units out there.
I didn't know you could connect directly to one.
Yeah, so I've had a few heart rate monitors before that I've just connected straight up to a phone app.
Yeah.
And they record onto the phone app or onto Strava. Or you can get a Garmin for about 100 quid.
You can, they're 130, I think.
Yeah.
Have you? The little one.
Yeah, I've tried it.
Teeny weeny one.
If you want to spend a bit more and you're really serious, like power meters are really good value now.
Yeah, we're talking
couple hundred quid maybe.
Really?
Yeah, like I think some of the Quark power meters that come stock on bikes now. You can pick a crank up for a couple hundred quid.
I guess that trickle down tech thing, because again you'd only see them on like the top level, like Force Red with the Quark stuff, but now you're seeing it on Rival as well.
I mean I have to say, if I was going for like on bike spec, like you say, it'd be tires probably.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference to how that the bike handles. Adam, what are we saying?
I would go down the tech route of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So before you'd even got to bolting on new bits to your bike, I think Owen and I discussed this recently, but set up or optimize the setup you've currently got. Mm-hmm. So like start with your bike fit, so saddle height, roll in your bars to the right spot depending on what you're doing, lever position as well. That'll make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Sort your pressures out. So tyres, suspension setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does take a little bit of tinkering.
I mean, it's free, right?
It's free.
Yeah.
And then you get in, because that will highlight things then once you've got that set up that you need to change. Yeah. So be it tyres. I'd maybe start with contact points.
Yeah.
So pedals and grips, right?
Pedals, grips, and by extension then.
Seat.
Yeah. And then shoes, gloves as well, because you often find your shoe brand will have like a corresponding pedal that works best with it, so like Shimano, Crank Brothers, etc. And also service your bike. Like I know you boys were chatting secondhand bikes a moment ago. Service it as soon as you get it.
So longevity we're talking.
Get yourself to that sort of like baseline to start with, and then you can work away from it, because you'd hope your seller's being honest, but until you take the thing apart you don't know exactly what's going on with it.
Agreed.
So again, another video that's coming out that was a lot of fun filming, but essentially I take a bike completely apart, service it, and put it back together.
Really? Just back to basic, back to like bare frame, isn't
exactly
it?
Exactly that. Linkage bearings out, and I only discovered...
the full works.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of play in the bike, I will admit, and taking the lowermost linkage bearings out, they were absolutely shot.
Okay.
So much movement in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not something you're going to pick up on a Facebook advert or anything, are you?
So no, not.
Get it into a workshop.
Bounce test around a car park type thing.
Exactly, yeah. Get it in a workshop, get it stripped down, get yourself to that baseline. You could be lucky and just get away with like a shift cable and a set of brake pads.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was a lot more sort of in-depth to find that, and you're only going to get to that by spending that money and getting you to that baseline.
Speaking of Sorry, I was speaking of free things, like you say, like suspension. When I joined the channel, did a video on like trying to find the best tire pressure for XC.
Yeah.
Something I'd done a bit, but actually it was the first time I actually had gone out, had a 20 pound to peak pressure gauge, and just literally went from 25 and dropped down 2 PSI increments. And it's like completely free to do that. It took me like...
Just time.
Yeah, we were filming, so it took me a bit longer, but if you weren't filming, it could take you a couple hours. Like, you can't believe the performance gains you make from actually finding the right tire pressure for you.
Well, I tell you what, then, why is it you know, I don't want to stray off topic. Why didn't you do that before? Because you're a student.
Yeah.
You had a load of time.
And I think you just, like,
in the zone, you're like that.
I had my training pressures that worked, and I never really got flat tires. Mm. I had my racing pressures that worked, never really got flat tires. So you're like, well, that works. And I guess I just wasn't hunting for that last 2-3% as I should have been, because I was like, I ran 23 PSI in the rear and 21 PSI in the front for training, and I'd run 21 in the rear for racing and 19 in the front. And yeah, it just worked. And then I realised actually by playing around with it, I could run them so much lower.
So you've got... I think that's actually... You've probably highlighted a great point. Yeah. People just get comfortable. They're like...
Oh, it works.
It works.
Fit and forget sort of vibe.
I mean, I'm guilty of it for sure. Do you know what? So I think there is definitely an element of that. And actually, I dived into the comments of what people would upgrade on the video. And there's all sorts of, you know, from cockpit, shoes, I think is a great shout. Yeah, proper definitely. Riding shoes if you start getting into it.
And like orthotics for your shoes as well. Like,
orthotics?
I can't stress that enough.
Yeah. Really?
It's like night and day difference.
If your feet are as bad as mine are, I have like custom insoles. I actually, now I've got Shimano shoes, they have adjustable insoles so you can run them for high arch or low arch. But before that, I used to get insoles molded to my feet. And it made such a blooming difference.
Well, I mean, again, there's more on here. You know, shopping around, there's great tires. If you actually do shop around, because tires can be quite expensive, hunting around. A favourite one of mine, I just dropped 10K on an e-bake.
E-bake? You can be great.
Hell of a cake. Battery powered. I just dropped 10K on an e-bike.
Yeah.
I'm now looking to upgrade my income.
Yeah.
Which, I don't blame you after dropping that.
How about you, Rich? What was you... you've got a couple hundred quid. Like, anything else?
Do you know what? I stand by what I put in the video. I wish I'd added some kind of coaching, but like, I think brakes make a huge difference.
Yep. Yeah.
I think tires make a monstrous difference. And like you said, it's a bit of a cop out, but setting things up, just taking the time to dive into your bike, get to know it, get to understand it. A lot of people buy parts that or have parts on their bike they don't really understand. Yep. So just really sort of delving sort of into the depths of it. But you know, let us know in the comments below, of course, if you had a certain amount of money or you were looking for the best value upgrade you could make to your bike, what would it be? But from us now, it's thank you very much for watching the Global Mountain Bike Show. We will see you next week.
Cheers for watching.
See ya.